Bobby Matos and his Afro-Latin Jazz Ensemble with Miles Davis's signature song, tune, I should say, All Blues. This was from Miles Davis's legendary 1959 album, Kind of Blue, and Matos reinterprets it in 2006 on his album, Gratitude. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a kind of a hodgepodge today of different things that I just thought we would discuss. And first up is the fact that today marks 75 years since the bombing, the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, taking place on August 6th and August 9th, respectively, in 1945, and killing between 129,000 and 226,000 people in each instance of bombing. Was the only use of nuclear weapons in armed conflict so far. And as we look back at this event occurring in 1945, and you see all the fervor about it, people can't wait for war. Can't wait for the United States to inflict maximum damage in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And what did we get? I mean, what was it all? Was it all worth it? That's the question. Was it worth it? Or was it a chance to demonstrate and boast to the world that there's a high price to pay for messing around with the United States? We will come after you and we will kill you in numbers that would just stagger you. And that was the great motivation behind the attacks, essentially, that the United States needed to prove its military superiority and decided that this was a dramatic way to show it. The world community of nations did not object generally, but they wanted also to observe this newfangled way of waging war. And the U.S. put on a show. We could dispatch our enemies in a short span of time. We don't have to spend days and weeks waging war. We have these weapons that are just awe-inspiring, and that can bring an end, the end we wish, that's the U.S. talking, the end we wish to have, and that is utter and complete destruction of the enemy with the weapons, the newly developed weapons that we have, nuclear weapons. I guess at that time, it was a matter of national pride and boasting of national superiority. You don't mess with the United States. We have ways of making you regret it and regret it instantly. And indeed, it was borne out. The threats were borne out. We'll make fast work of war. It is not going to be pretty, but war is not meant to be pretty. But we will get the desired result in a short space of time and with utter and complete victory. Our enemies, in the meantime, will spend countless years just trying to recuperate if they can. Imagine that, a war in which you don't have to descend to the field and do hand-to-hand combat. You don't have to dirty your hands. You don't have to get involved in the minutiae of war. You just blitz people. You make them disappear through disintegration. You bomb their land, and even decades afterwards, the land is rendered useless or unusable because it is so contaminated. So it's not just a one-off action. It lasts for decades and decades. On a day like this, we think about entering how we entered as a nation and as a world, a new way of war. War was always a spectacular thing. You have to mobilize and people have to gather together and you have to have weapons and even had to have people helping the soldiers get ready for war. This put an end to all of that. None of that was necessary anymore. All you needed was your bomb. You loaded it up on your plane and you fly toward the designated target. You release the bomb and you get the heck out of there because it is a potent bomb. It will kill and keep on killing, and you have to be out of range as quickly as possible. But on August the 6th, 1945, 129,000 people couldn't get out of the way fast enough. And having demonstrated the lethality of this new weapon, it returned again to Nagasaki to inflict pain one more time 3 days later, on August the 9th. Instantly eviscerating 226,000 people. And those lucky enough to escape direct attack nonetheless were attacked because of the fallout, the nuclear fallout that made them sick. And then eventually they died. Most of them, anyway. It was a monumental moment in world history, but for different reasons. I wonder, what reason do you think, what reason do you have in your mind for this kind of a blistering attack on the enemy? Was it justified? What was the motivation behind it other than in instilling fear? And on the flip side of that coin, demonstrating to Americans how superior they are in warfare. The count wasn't anything close to 129,000 or 226,000 3 days later. He came away clean, thanks to nuclear war. So we spent all those decades since believing firmly in the necessity of nuclear war, except the explanation changed to, we don't want to use it. But in the event that we are pushed into that situation, we can use it with great effect. In the meantime, our would-be enemies have spent a lot of time and research in developing their counter to the nuclear war. It might be germ warfare. It might be poisoning the land. It might be other agents, as we saw in Vietnam, just poisoning the land and defoliating the land, causing massive damage to people and killing them eventually anyway. So let's cogitate about this a minute. On a day like this, when you know your thoughts are elsewhere, the last thing most people are thinking about today is a U.S. attack on Hiroshima and Nagasaki 45 years ago that inflicted unbelievable pain and death to hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom had nothing to do with the war. They were just casualties of the war. Have we grown from this at all? Have we learned anything except becoming more and more efficient at killing people, at executing a war? What do you think? At 888-874-4888. On a day like this, what should come to mind, you think, after such devastation in 1945? Ed from Jamaica, you on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, you too. How are you?
Okay, thank you, Ed.
Well, I was in the military, and I worked with these type of weapons. I was a weapons specialist. And to be totally honest with you, this should be a day of remorse. This should be a day of mourning and solace, because to be quite frankly with you, Oppenheimer and Fermi didn't even know if this was going to work. There were suppositions as far as the development of the atomic bomb, where it might have even set fire to the whole atmosphere. And the main reason why it was dropped on Japan and not on Germany is because of whiteness. Japan was an island of yellow people. It was an experimental weapon which could have grave to devastating effects, because the physicists that were developing it were theoretical physicists. And no, there was one time physics said that there wasn't enough fissionable material to support an atomic explosion, or there might be a drastic chain reaction. So no one knew. No one knew what this bomb was going to do. There was tests, there were theories, but no one actually had put this into practice. And the best place to test it was on an island full of yellow people. Germany was creating heinous atrocities. If you wanted to bomb someone on a scale of that, using that as a scale, why not bomb them? You know, but that was Europe. So you know, this country has a lot of shame with it. And this is one of the greatest shames that I believe is in modern history, to test a weapon of that devastating power on primarily civilian targets. And yes, people still suffer to this day with leukemia, with different forms of cancers, with different mental traumas. Some of the survivors were suffering long after the effects of radiation, the effects of alpha and beta particles. So yeah, this is a real dark day in American history.
How come we don't hear that on this particular day? It's just another day.
Well, you would hear it if you were in Japan. There's a museum
yes,
dedicated to the survivors. I mean, just because we're in America, and America is the great I am. America, you know, progress and industry and the devastating attack. Let's not talk about how Pearl Harbor was a setup. Let's not talk about how Roosevelt wanted to get into World War II to help get out of the Depression, number one, and number two, to defend Europe. There's a lot of things that go on with World War II and why we were in it and the time we got in it and how the resources were allocated towards it and why the nuclear device was used and considered an option. And one of the biggest things that no one ever talks about, that I've really heard, only in Howard Zinn's history of American history have I ever heard that, and that's where I got the idea from, that it was an island full of yellow people. And if something went wrong, hey, it won't affect the quote-unquote whiteness of the world.
Does the United States have an obligation at least to make an attempt at admitting that the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was even against the rules of war, if you want to look at it that way? Because it was just unmatched, unimaginable devastation. And the so-called enemy didn't have a chance. They couldn't defend themselves against that. It was just so one-sided that it was, I would imagine, even by the rules of war, an uneven match, and therefore a wrong thing to do. From that perspective,
well, I mean, either it was a violation of the Geneva Convention, it was a violation of a proportional response. The Japanese wanted to surrender; they wanted to, but they were honorable. They are honorable people, and they wanted to surrender, but they didn't want an unconditional surrender. They wanted to surrender with options, you know, like and Hirohito was willing to do that. But America wanted to test this device; they wanted to show the world that we have cracked the atom, and we're the masters of your fate, and that's all this was about. Like I said, the atomic bomb was developed. The war could have been over. They always used the excuse that the American casualties because of the Battle of the Midway and the Coral Islands battle. But the problem was all the resources went to Europe first before they went to the South Pacific, and allegedly we were supposed to be attacked by Japan. But why did all our resources first go to Europe? And then after the conflict in Europe had basically been settled by the Russians, then we devoted our resources to the islands, the Philippines, the Battle of the Midway, and eventually the conquest of Japan. It was unnecessary. It was a necessary waste of life. And to be totally honest with you, not to get too metaphysical, this country's paying for it. This country's paying for it. Paying for it with Donald Trump. Paying for it with this COVID, it's paying for it. And there's, like Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of the universe leans towards righteousness. And America's got a couple of upcomings to get for all of the crimes that it's done on the world.
Okay, you got us started in a very powerful way today. Thanks for calling. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing okay, dear, thank you. I had a teacher in the eighth grade, a history teacher, and he didn't spare any of the gory details. These people, when this bomb, they were going to school, little kids going to school in the morning, people going about their bed, and all of a sudden, there's this bomb come down. The heat was so intense that the teeth turned red. The blades of grass catapulted out of the ground and into the people. They would be jumping on top of each other into the fountains in the squares, 10 high. It was just horrendous. And this is all another trick, like they tricked us on 9/11. We let Pearl Harbor happen. Oh, the Japanese tricked us. They sneak attacked us. So now we have a reason to test out these atomic bombs on human beings. You see? So this way, the American people are all behind it because Japan sneak attacked us first and destroyed our ships in Pearl Harbor. I think it was an agreement between the leaders of the countries of United States, Japan, Italy, Germany. All these countries were in cahoots because they got rid of what they needed to get rid of, and now they wanted to test out this bomb. And this was the way they go about things. Just like in 9/11, now we had a reason to go over and destroy the Middle East. It's the same game they play with us all the time. You know, when we feel there's too many of us around, then they have to reduce the population. Now, instead of atomic bombs, we'll do it with viruses. This is the way it is, Eutrice. It's despicable, you know.
Were you in the military?
My brother was in Vietnam, got shot through both knees. I was only 12 years old when he was 19. So he was having a nice life, didn't go to college, but he was a good, hard-working guy, got a job, he was enjoying himself, then he gets the letter in the mail, he's got to go to Vietnam. I told him, don't go, Gary, go to Canada. He says, if I go to Canada, they won't let me come back into the country then, and I'll never see you. But I didn't think that would be. But my father told him he'd join the Navy and do 4 years. At least you won't be in the jungles. But he didn't listen, and he went into the Army. And after a year and a half, then he got shot through both knees, came back, and they put him on the pills for 15 years. And then his life was over at 38.
Fit, you think, into the narrative that the United States, with respect to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, was just doing what it had to do. And the primary motivation was to prevent any further attack on the United States or any other country. And so it took the lead in this attack and in this kind of way with an unknown weapon of immense proportion that is able to kill a whole bunch of people at the same time, throw the country in disarray. But in any event, it accomplished a great thing for the United States, and that is to establish the United States as the world leader.
Right.
What do you say to that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I say they can go to hell. And you know, what they did to the Vietnamese people was the same, was even just as bad as what happened to Japan. And just we just brutalized people throughout the world. And it's just in the name of money. That's all it is, Eutrice. You know, we want progress, and we go along with it. And then in the end, we realize that we're leading to our own demise because we're going along with things. People just don't have enough sense in their head to see the difference. They get mind controlled. You know, the television back in the 40s, around the same time they were dropping that bomb, you know, the brainwashing tools started to come out. And we're lost now. What do we got? 10% of the 90% might be aware of what's really going on, and the rest of them are supporting the system that's going to kill them.
Well, some people would say, well, some good things came out of it. The United
what?
States is, in fact, respected as a major military power, And in a sense, that has been good for countries that don't have the wherewithal to defend themselves. The U.S. would come in and defend them. Okay. So that wasn't too bad an aftermath to have. United States being the world's protector, as it were. The United States kind of cleaning up its image, not as a world killer, but as a world protector and a seeker of peace. What do you say?
Yeah, well, you know, John F. Kennedy might have been thinking that way and would like to see that kind of thing happen, but we saw what happened to him by not doing what he's told to do, because the people that are running the show are evil. It's nothing. They've been corrupted to so much that their brains have become diseased from this money that they want to have, this power and this money. You know, and you had a guy, John F. Kennedy, who didn't think like that, and he cared about people, and people all over the world, not just the United States, and we should have said more after he was killed. We should have been outraged, just like they were outraged about George Floyd. And we should have been out there every day till we got these culprits and brought them to task. But nothing ever happened. We just watched beautiful men who had great ethics. John F. Kennedy, his brother, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all get slaughtered, and we did nothing. We did nothing.
Thanks, Eve, for calling in today.
Thank you.
We'll take a couple more calls on the subject. We're talking about the fact that today represents 45 years since the nuking, if you will, of Hiroshima, and then 3 days later of Nagasaki. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I can hear you.
You two sound so hurt and angry because, you know, just the thought of murdering so many people, it really angers me. Because, you know, any mind that would think, first of all, there's no justification for that. There's no justification at all. I don't care what you tell me. There's no justification for that kind of behavior.
Well, according to military rules, you know, there is justification. If a country believes that it is facing imminent attack from a mighty enemy, well armed, and it is going to happen within the laws of war, they can and should take preemptive action, which is what the United States ended up explaining its attack on Hiroshima and Nagasaki as preemptive action, and in order to avoid even bigger attacks and on the United States.
Yeah, I'm sure that you'll find a way and words to justify your wickedness and madness. That's nonsense. I'm not buying into that, you trees. You know, in a mind that think of creating that kind of weaponry is a satanic mind.
It's not a satanic mind. You have to see it for what it is. We are not military people, so we don't think like military people. Military people think like military people. And in their view, this was going to solve a lot of problems in the shortest period of time. To inflict such heavy damage that the enemy will be disabled, not just physically, but psychologically as well. They wouldn't even think of another
instance where they could challenge the authority and the political might of the United States. In their world, it made perfect sense.
Yeah. Yes, Eutrice, but we are based on the history of this nation and their so-called world. Their world is dominating and killing as many innocent women and children and robbing them of their wealth. So
well,
that's not a just...
There are so many nations, though. And this, I'm not defending the United States. I'm saying we have to understand that we come from two entirely different worlds. The military world, the world that is assigned the task of safeguarding a nation, protecting a nation, and going against enemies of the nation, that's the purpose of the military. So they think like that. But even so, there are rules and laws. You know, you just can't do whatever you want in the military, even in the name of protecting the country. There are certain things you simply cannot do. And that is why, prior to taking summary action of this magnitude, mostly you have nations and their allies coming together and examining the question, are we operating or will we be operating within the established guidelines and the laws we're supposed to obey? You and I are civilians. We don't know this. We don't know this world at all.
Well, we may not know it, Eutrice, but we have seen the history of this, particularly this nation, and the European so-called allies. They are nothing more than a gangs, violent criminal gangs. Look at what they've done to all over the world.
You know, I mean, I understand your passion and so forth, but keep focus. You can't call them violent, passionate gangs. This is the world of war, and it comes with it. Which is why, to this day, there hasn't been the kind of inquest that needed to be done in the aftermath of Vietnam, when we know so much wrong was done. This was another example. In fact,
so it preceded
Vietnam.
Is Libya. So is Iraq, and all over the world. You agree?
Yes, but that's what they have pretty much agreed. Not agreed, like they shook hands and said, okay, we both understand the rules. But that's what it has deteriorated to, where people making war against each other do whatever the heck they want to do, because the bottom line is they have to come home with something called victory. And however they get the victory, they get it. We have not seen, except in the Vietnam War, where you had people mobilizing against the atrocities committed by the U.S. military. We have not seen in this country a tradition of confronting the military, demanding answers, demanding congressional investigation. We haven't seen that. The military is so forceful. It is so influential that people whose job it is to raise questions and investigate say nothing. Vietnam is the classic example. And it goes even back into the days of the Civil War. What they did to people who helped the other side. It's not a pretty picture at all, but we can't just say, well, that makes them gangsters. It makes us all gangsters. Because we did not have the courage to face this down. We did not have the courage to demand answers. And we certainly didn't have the courage to demand punishment for military leaders who ran afoul of military law. It's not like there was no law, including international law, governing wars. How you fight a war, what you're not supposed to do. There are such laws, you know.
But war. I don't believe in wars, period.
You say that, but you can't say, I don't believe in war, period. You've not been in a position or situation where it was a real possibility for you to go to war. You could say that because it has never happened that you have had to seriously contemplate taking military action. You haven't been in that position. So you have the advantage of a certain distance from these questions and issues that military people and heads of state and whatnot. This is why you have the United Nations and you have other world organizations who are trying to instill a sense of observing rules of war. There are rules. There's certain things you just can't do, but they do them all the time, and worse.
But
this is the interesting thing about war. Anything to win justifies you doing anything you want.
We now know that based on what we've learned in our lifetime, that wars are created for people to make money. And they use poor people.
But no, that's not the only reason. Wars are created. People go to war over a whole bunch of things. They go over war because the other side has taken land it's not entitled to.
Right.
They go to war over resources. They go to war over all kinds of things. So we do not have a single answer for any of this that we're talking about. But we have to recognize in the way that we have witnessed wars in our time, it appears that people aren't following the rules of war. It's led to great confusion and complete
destruction.
It leads to the question of who has what rights in a situation where countries are coming to blows with each other. Who has rights to stop it? And under what conditions? Are unarmed people marching in the street going to exert any influence? No, they don't have weapons. They don't count. That's the thinking. You don't have weapons. You're chanting, you're singing, you have your placards and so forth. None of that matters when the issue is about guns and nuclear weapons and who will win this conflict. You don't matter.
Well, you know, what I'm looking at is that the soldiers and those people, they could defy these orders.
They cannot
defy the orders.
How are they going to defy the orders when they have absolutely no authority?
We have one of the finest examples that walked on this earth. His name was Muhammad Ali. He went up against the United States government.
Muhammad Ali, let's be clear, he was not involved in the war. He was to be. They were making plans for him. And it is on the basis of conscience that he refused to go to war and support that.
Exactly.
But he had never been in a war as a soldier.
But you cannot have wars unless you have people willing to fight you, Chief.
Yeah, but you're mixing up two different things. I'm talking about how wars, as we have observed, how wars are conducted, how they're fought, and how they severely restrict the rights of people to do anything about it. Civilians, once a war is in motion, you have absolutely no power to stop it. You have no power to stop it. In fact, they could actually accuse you and charge you, you know, with trying to undermine the military interests of the nation, which was to protect you. You may not agree, but that is immaterial. The fact is, you're coming up against a mighty machine. You tell me, in the instance that we're talking today about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I'm sure there are many, many, many civilians who objected. What was their chance of prevailing in an argument when the people that they're fighting against are the ones who are dropping the bombs and are pushing for exactly that? What influence could you possibly have in a situation so well organized against you? In fact, it will tell the world that you're a traitor to your country.
This is what we told you, Jesus.
The idea being that what is war? War is about winning. And if you are going to interfere with that formula, you have to be seen as a traitor to your own country. We're trying to defend not just you personally, but we're trying to defend all millions of people in this country. And here you come with, you know, you're talking peace and you're talking, let's stop the war. That's not part of the equation. And they'll never tolerate it as part of the equation. You entering the fray at the point of war. What influence could you expect to have?
But we do know, Utrecht, that most the Vietnam War, that was a lie.
It doesn't matter what it was. Now you're switching to another argument. The Vietnam War was not a lie as far as the military was concerned. As far as the military was concerned and the people of the United States were concerned, this was a military intervention to save even more major problems and to protect the United States and all Americans. How are you going to argue against that?
Utrecht, any nation, there's no nation in their right mind would contemplate attacking the United States. That would be suicidal.
There are people who don't mind being suicidal. In some places, being suicidal, giving your life for your country, is a noble thing. It is a great honor. In fact, in Japan itself, when all these kamikaze pilots put that band around their forehead with the red sun, knowing they're not coming back, intending to not come back, they knew it was the plan. Do not come back alive, or don't come back at all. That wasn't crazy to them. It was a matter of honor to them. Different ways of interpreting allegiance to country. You see, we're not thinking the way the military thinks right now. We're talking from the point of view of civilians with feelings. That doesn't work in the military. You can't have feelings and be in the military, because just about everything that you're commanded to do in the real world would go against just about everybody's feelings. Somebody points out a little kid, 6 years old, shoot him. And you would say, well, okay, that's a command. I'll do that. Now, that doesn't sound logical at all in the real world, but we're not in the real world. And we have to understand what the military is. Any military outfit, they have an entirely different way of thinking and doing things. It's not going to cause a soldier to lose any sleep if he's ordered to shoot a child. He can shoot the child, go have a sandwich. Because that's what being a soldier means. You obey orders, and then you're right with the world again. It requires you to be schizophrenic and psychotic. You can't have soldiers with conscience and expect to win a war. Your job is to kill as many people as possible, to wipe out entire villages. You're killing the old ones, you're killing the young ones, you're killing women and men, you're just killing, you're a killing machine. There's no room for contemplation. You're following orders. That's what you're doing. That's what makes you a good soldier.
Thank you for your time.
I know it's
but I'm still really
I know
really
it has
angry,
done nothing to
annoyed.
Persuade you.
Because you know, I'm thinking this thing has got to come to an end. The world of wars, racism, robbery, and murder. No, it has to come to a closure.
Well,
it has
let's
to come
look
to a closure
this way. We are several thousand years on this planet. It hasn't come to closure, and I doubt it ever will. But there is a chance that the military could be forced to reckon with popular sentiment. But that has to be overwhelmingly evidenced and expressed. You can't have six people with placards changing anything. It's not going to work. On our side of the fence, we are either committed or we're not. If we're not, we should fold up our traps and go home. And if we are committed, we are committed to the long haul. But nobody wants to do that. So we get into these intermittent skirmishes, which is what they are, and then, well, whatever happens, happens. And we know that the military will always win unless we are committed and unless we have a plan and a tactic as to how to achieve this plan. We'll just be talking. They'll be shooting and we'll be talking. Thanks, Willie, for your call. And that brings us to the end of our program today. It is, I think, appropriate that we spent a moment or so to recall this dastardly moment in history. And hopefully we can persuade the powers that be to never let it happen again. Thanks. We'll see each other tomorrow. It's Free Your Mind Friday. And feel free to free your mind. Bye-bye.